Portugal has only had a multi-party democracy since 1974, after some four decades under an autocratic dictatorship. Hungary was recently called an electoral autocracy by the European Parliament because of Viktor Orban's lock on the government, while recent elections in Poland swapped control of its government to an anti-authoritarian party by a thin margin. We're getting the views of tour guide friends of mine right now on Travel with Rick Steves on political trends in their countries. Claudia da Costa comes to us from Lisbon in Portugal. Tomasz Klimek lives in Krakow in Poland. And Andrea Makay is from Budapest, Hungary. This is so fascinating to compare the realities that all of us who care about our societies, our neighborhoods, our freedom, have to deal with. And it's not easy. It's complicated. And we've learned a lot from history. We're learning a lot from each other as we go through these challenges. I'm very curious, because this is a big issue in the United States. In your countries, where do you think most people get their news in order to make their political decisions?
Claudia. Well, in Portugal, we have still a lot of newspapers. But unfortunately, most of the newspapers are what we call it sensationalists.
So sensationalists, yes.
Sensationalists. And then radio as well.
But so when you say sensationalist, does that mean made very exciting to sell more?
Exactly.
And it has a political agenda. So this would be famous as a right-wing newspaper, and this would be a left-wing newspaper.
Exactly.
And what is the power of social media to shape people's political perspectives in Poland, in Portugal?
A big power. But I think it's important for everyone, not only the Portuguese. We can read right, left-wing newspapers, but we have to think with our heads. So it's our choice, okay?
That's what I learned in Central America. Anybody who really wanted to know, they would buy the right-wing paper and the left-wing paper.
Exactly.
And they would then have to digest that together. Because a person on the left is just as naive as a person on the right if their whole viewpoint is shaped by media that they agree with. Tomasz, in Poland, how do people get their news and what shapes their political perspectives?
So Poland is no different. It's very much divided and polarized. And just to give you an example, the previous parliament elections, there were two candidates from the opposite sides, and there was 50.2 to 49.8. So you see the division.
It's so like, that was the recent election that was a tidal change in Poland.
The recent presidential election, yeah. So like one before, but still it shows you kind of how it is. So the same, no different with the news. So you have this like more conservative type of media and more liberal, and like still reading on the same event on those two
like
wings,
two different events.
You are reading about two different worlds.
Is there no middle of the road media?
There is actually one party that shaped the actual political scene, and they call themselves Third Road, literally, because they want to do something in between.
Third Road.
And this is like a huge hope. And
see, we have that in our society, mm-hmm. but we have a different kind of government because we're a two-party system, essentially. And if you vote for something you might agree with more, you could be helping the enemy politically. So you're perplexed. But in a parliamentary system like I think you've got, you have many different parties.
Yes.
And then nobody's going to get the majority. So they have to have a coalition. Is that right?
They have to coalition. So even though technically this governing like more central right party won,
yeah,
but they couldn't form a coalition. So eventually they have to give power away. So this is also the beauty of democracy, that even if you are a winner, you still cannot rule.
In Poland, what's the power of social media?
Social media has amazing power, and kind of naturally, more of this power goes to this central left side, as this more conservative part is more involved in internet and Facebook and other social media.
So who benefits from it?
So the central left sort of benefits more from it, because the social media is generally
favors the left in your society.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
I'm not sure what it is in our society, but that's a very important point. Mm-hmm. Andrea, in Hungary, what news shapes people's perspectives?
Yes, so basically comparing to what Claudia and Tomasz was mentioning, it's very, very different in Hungary, because we do know how powerful news are, how powerful radio, the whole media. In Hungary, we are at the situation now that basically there is a very high percentage of the media is in the hand of the government. So let's say you live in a little village, you don't have, let's say, internet, or even if you don't, if you have internet, you don't read on the internet. You just switch on the national television, number one channel, number two channel, several other channels, and you always find the same kind of propaganda of the government.
So then the government has really taken over the official media.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a very high percentage of the media is owned by the government. And then you buy a newspaper, let's say, and then you read the same thing. Then you even buy your little gossip newspaper where you want to read about your, let's say, actor and actress and whatever. And little articles are about also explaining to you the propaganda. And that's very disproportionate.
And this is interesting in the United States because a lot of American consumers of news don't understand who owns their small town newspaper. But our small town newspapers have been pretty much owned by big corporate interests with a political agenda. And it's kind of tricky, but it shapes people's opinions without people even realizing that.
Yes,
and you're saying in Hungary you have that, but everybody realizes it.
Yes, well, they do realize it. But of course, we also have to admit that there are many people that don't look behind the scenes. They don't also understand it.
So the less sophisticated consumers of news would buy the Orbán line.
Of course. And they would not understand that it's all coming from the same sources.
But you're not so naive. I'm talking right now to a person from Hungary who knows the difference. How do you do that?
Yes, well, I mean, basically, there are many, many people that would like to have their news from both sides. And also, yeah. I would definitely emphasize that it's very important, again, not to just try to say that everything that they do is bad.
Right.
So we have to get the information, we have to analyze it and come up with our conclusion.
You are great. And is the social media very strong in yours? Is it controlled by the government?
No. On social media, you can post anything you want. We have all sorts of groups and Facebook and Instagram and all over. You can write about what you want. You can have anti-governmental posts. You can do that. You can do that because it is still a democracy. There is no doubt about that. It's very important to emphasize that. But on the other hand, there is a much smaller percentage of the media that gives way to what the, let's say, opposition parties would like to communicate to the people.
Sometimes that's the easier choice for them to make. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking democracy and divided societies and what's going on politically in Europe now. So perhaps we can better understand what's going on in our country. You can learn so much from history and you can learn so much by traveling and talking to people who have the same challenges in their society that we have today in ours. Our guests are Andrea Mackay from Budapest in Hungary, Claudia da Costa from Lisbon in Portugal, and Tomasz Klimek from Krakow in Poland. If you were a wannabe autocrat in your country and you knew what the answers were, you said, hey, democracy is old news. I know the answer, only I can fix it. And you needed to win the election. Andrea, how would you get elected in Hungary? What fears would you capitalize on in your society to get elected?
If it would be, let's say, today, I would definitely just say practically that we don't want to send all our husbands and sons and fathers to the war, and I'm going to protect every single citizen of Hungary not to be sent over to the Ukrainian war and fight, because that's kind of a threat that and everybody would understand and say, oh, well, I'm going to vote for that person who is promising that we are never going to get involved in that war.
And if you were to assess how Orbán has capitalized on people's fears, how did he fearmonger?
As time came on, first it was the migrants, then it was the pandemic, how he is the only one can protect the people, how if there was a left-wing government, then just everybody would die. And then it continued on, of course, with the Ukrainian war. So everything that happens, you just have to plant the fear in the head of the people. And then they're going to say, okay, these are turbulent times. We better stick to that person that we already have. Or if it was not the case, then we would better vote for that person who is promising us that nothing is going to change.
I gotcha. Tomasz from Poland, how would you capitalize on, not how would you personally, but if you just wanted power, what trick would you play on your people to get them to vote for you?
It's a very difficult question. I personally feel kind of weird even answering that.
Yeah.
But when I was listening to Andrea's previous comments, those are actually the current situation that is happening, okay? So if there was a case of immigrants, there will be kind of like, because you always have to be fear number one. You cannot put too many because then it's going to disperse. So you have to focus on like one major enemy, okay? And build on it.
Right.
So you would have to decide what will be the biggest enemy at that point, okay, of this campaign, of your speech and so on, because right. It is also changing throughout the time.
Yeah.
But kind of ironically, if I can just comment, so this kind of enemy that I'm saying in between the brackets now, the refugees, but when the war in the Ukraine broke out, 4.2 million Ukrainians went over to Poland and we opened them with the open arms. And this sort of previous enemy became something that united Poland. And regardless of your political opinion, everyone was supportive of that.
Wow.
People were hosting them, driving them from the border. So what I'm trying to say that even this enemy that is presented as an enemy, at certain point, if you plan it well, it can become something that is uniting us as a nation. And this is something that united Poland, which is amazing. And no one was expecting it, to be honest.
That is quite astounding. Claudia.
In Portugal, the situation is much different, as my friends and colleagues are talking about. I think the most important thing that the Portuguese are fighting now is for to have good jobs. A lot of young people are leaving the country because the salaries are bad. So, and I'm talking about those who finish their university, so they have university degrees. And one of the fears, and that's why I think that party's extreme right party is becoming popular, is because that party is saying they are taking their jobs. Who are they? Foreigners. Mm-hmm. People that are not from Portugal, and they just come to find better conditions of living. So I would say that the worst fear right now for the Portuguese is work. And good salaries. We are fighting for good
jobs. Yeah. And when you say people might come in and take these jobs, would they be poor people coming in from the south or highly educated people coming in?
Both. In fact, we have both. Uh-huh. Because we also have, this is a little strange because we say we don't want our qualified young people leave the country, such as doctors and nurses, but they do because the salaries are bad. So we are hiring qualified people from other countries. And this is kind of weird. Why we don't raise the salaries for the Portuguese to stay and not having others from other countries that they are okay with the salaries that we offer in Portugal.
So many interesting, related but not always the same issues that are driving these political discussions. We're looking at the pressures on democracy in Europe right now on Travel with Rick Steves. For perspectives on what's influencing the political process there, our guides are Claudia da Costa from Lisbon, Portugal, Tomasz Klimek from Krakow, Poland, and Andrei Makay from Budapest, Hungary. We have links to our guests with each week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. I'm just very curious about how you see your future in your country when it comes to democracy. Just give me a yes or no answer. 10 years from now, will your country have a democracy, a strong democracy, or will it have opted for autocracy at the expense of much of the democracy? Claudia, in Portugal.
I believe in Portugal, I'm pretty sure that we will have a democracy in 10 years.
And many of you can remember living under the fascist government.
Yeah, because I think
generation.
It's too recent what we lived, yeah. Especially women, was yeah. very tough. My mom, my grandma, well, all women in the time. And I don't think, even if there is people that are voting for other kind of parties that they believe they can change the world or Portugal, I still believe that we will live in a democracy in 1 to 10 years, 20 years from now.
Nice. Tomasz in Poland.
I believe in democracy. I think we'll stay there, basing on the fact that, first of all, we fought for it for so long, for freedom and for being able to be a democratic country. It hasn't been that long, so we still kind of appreciate it. We don't take it for granted. It is shown by our high voting rate. And those swings that are happening are actually good for democracy in
that's,
a way.
That's progress,
healthy.
Yeah.
You should change it
so
if it
too.
Stays too long.
I like the pendulum. No. I just don't like the radical pendulum.
Yeah.
Andrea, from Hungary, and that's the country that I think it's fair to say has the most entrenched and successful far-right government in Europe right now.
That's right. But what I would like to kind of say about this is that I'm 100% sure that there will be democracy. we have overcome, starting from the Mongolians, the Turks, the Habsburg Empire, Soviet ruling, communism. We are still here. And I think it's a learning process for us to really learn how to live in a democratic country. And we learn it the hard way, that's 100% sure, but there will be democracy, and I'm absolutely certain about that.
That is very hopeful, and it sounds like you know better than I do Hungary's future, so I hope you are right. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with André Maquet from Hungary, Claudia da Costa from Portugal, and Tomasz Klimek from Poland. And I want to finish our discussion just to ask you guys, when you look at the United States, what do you see and what would you like to say to us as we prepare to vote, given the experience you have in your country? Tomasz from Poland.
So I would say don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. This is still democracy. You're in a democratic country. Don't let anyone tell you that something that is happening could be a threat or could be and change it into an enemy for you, because actually it could be the opposite, as it happened in Poland. The idea of the refugees became something that united us, as we accepted over those 4.2 million Ukrainian refugees that were looking some peace and hope in our country. And it united us. It was a surprise. No one knew about it. No one could plan it. But looking at it from perspective, I would say don't be afraid and don't let present certain things as an enemy.
So what you could be encouraged to be afraid of could actually be your society's friend.
Exactly.
Claudia from Portugal.
Well, what I will say is that first you have to think what you are doing. You have to understand the consequences of you will do, okay? So after you know and you really understand what this is going to be the consequence for you, for your future, for your family, for your life, then if you vote, if you choose according to what you think, but when I say what you think in a general picture. Don't only think about yourself, but think in a general picture. Think on the consequence of what you do in the future.
I like that. Not me today, but us tomorrow.
Exactly.
Andrea from Hungary.
So I would say that United States is always a symbol of democracy. So it's an example to the world what to do, how to think, how to make a decision. And I think it's very, very important because, again, you have been living in democracy always, let's say. So this is natural for you. And I'm not saying that you should wake up every morning and say thanks to God that you live in a democratic country, but don't take it for granted. And everybody should realize that they do make a difference. So if those kind of, let's say, percentage of how many people vote in the US would be similar to what Tomasz was saying in Poland, that would be a very, very important step to live with your democratic rights. That you and as an individual make a difference. You can make a difference.
You guys, I am so thankful for this discussion. Thank you all very much. And it'd be great to meet again in a few years and compare notes again. And hopefully we have lots of good news for our democracies.
I hope in 10 years we will see here and we see if all of us, we live in a democracy.
Amen. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you for having us.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kaz Murrah-Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are by Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You'll find more about our guests at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.